Tonight, I want to take us through a little bit of Habakkuk's journey. If we said the prophet Habakkuk, I imagine that 90% of us would be like, yep, no Habakkuk. Got to sing the song if I'm going to find Habakkuk. But I probably couldn't tell you anything about Habakkuk. Well, the book of Habakkuk is only 3 chapters. It's very short. And it ends in what Akang read for us. It ends in him coming to the conclusion, verse 18, yet I will exult in the Lord. It is in contrast with the verse right before and the rest of the book. The rest of the book are about things, as we just sang, that he does not understand. I didn't ask Eddie to lead that song, but it couldn't have been any more perfect lead-in. And Habakkuk doesn't understand everything. But at the conclusion, the only thing he can sensibly come to is, God will save me. And in that, I will rejoice. And so, I want to go back and I want to just walk through the book of Habakkuk. It's not going to be an in-depth lesson. Don't have time. But we will go through all of the texts of the book of Habakkuk. And I want you just to try to put yourself here. If you flip back to Habakkuk chapter 1, and I'm going to put all the passages on here tonight, so you've got them up here. But if you flip back to the beginning, it just says Habakkuk in verse 1, and then verse 2 is what we get to. He doesn't start off in this joyous, or what we might think of him jumping over with the hind feet. He's just flying around in the high places. That's not the way the book starts. The book starts, and notice in verse 2, how long, O Lord, will I call for help and you will not hear? I cry out to you, violence, yet you do not say. Does that sound like somebody that is joyous in any way, shape, form, or fashion? No, that is someone who is utterly distraught. Imagine for a second that you have these people who are, as we're going to see, there are major problems in Judah. There are problems with his own people, and that is what he is crying out about. That is what he is frustrated about. That is what he is upset about. And he says, why do you make me see iniquity and cause me to look on wickedness? Like, we're supposed to be your people. But yet there is wickedness all in your people. Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contention arises. Therefore, the law is ignored and justice is never upheld. We have nothing good in us right now. And I've cried out to you about this. Over and over, I said, this is terrible. What are you going to do about this? To the point where he feels, for the wicked have surrounded the righteous. Therefore, justice comes out perverted. Have you ever felt ganged up against? Where people were literally out to get you? What feeling does that feel like? Helpless? Hopeless? A little apprehensive? Scared? And you imagine yourself, right? Like this little kid, he's got everyone pointing at him. What is he crying out if it's happening in school? Help! Help! And what do you expect? He probably expects a teacher to help. He probably expects some administrator to come help, right? Imagine you're crying out over and over and nobody says anything, nobody does anything. But yet, somebody is standing there and they're watching the whole thing. Imagine what you would think if your teacher, going back to your grade school days, heard you crying out, they're hurting me, they're hurting me. And they hear that and they just sit there and they just look at you. How would you feel about that teacher? Wouldn't we be upset when it was all said and done? Why didn't you save me? And we would look at them and we'd say, a teacher should have done something about that. And rightfully so. But in one sense, that's God. That is the way that Habakkuk sees God right now. As I'm crying out to you, they are surrounding me and you have ignored me. You have ignored us, the righteous people. They have surrounded us. Well, the Lord answered him. And the Lord says to him, what I'm about to tell you, you won't believe. Look, verse 5, among the nations. Observe.
be astonished, wonder, because I'm doing something in your days you would not believe if you were told. Steve Harvey, sometimes he gets some answers on the Family Feud where his jaw just drops. Like, what are you talking about? The Lord says, that's what I'm doing with you. You don't have a clue what I'm doing. And quite frankly, you're not even going to believe it after I tell you. Has anyone ever told you that? You're not going to believe what happened to me today. We don't mean that they're not going to believe it. We're just saying this is so far out, this is so far-fetched, that you can't believe what happened to me. Well, that's what God is saying. You can't believe what I'm doing. Habakkuk. Well, what is he doing? Well, behold, look, I'm raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They are dreaded and feared. Their justice and their authority originate within themselves. Do what? Habakkuk, I've got this nation. They're pretty mean. They are going out, they're just taking from everybody else. And they're the ones that I am raising up to bring judgment on these wicked people. You're right, Lord. I can't believe that. It's probably what Habakkuk you said. What? Why would you use this people? And he goes on to describe just how ferocious and fearless these people are. He's talking about them, and we don't have time to describe them in depth right here. But just notice there in verse 7, they are dreaded and fearful. Well, he explains what he means by that. He gives some images to that. Verse 8, their horses are swifter than leopards. That is a fast horse. They are swifter than leopards. They are keener than wolves in the evening. Remember that picture of the wicked surrounding the righteous? What do the wolves do? They work in packs, don't they? And they are smart. And because why? They are getting their prey. They have something they're going after. And that is what this nation is like. They are wise in the way in which they take their prey. And their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They're not just hanging around home. They're going great distances. And they fly like an eagle swooping down to devour. They come quickly and they come for blood and they take it and then they go right to the next place. That's a scary group of people. And all of them come for violence, verse 9. We can't stress that enough. They're not coming to just take your stuff. They are coming to kill. Well, they come. And their horde of their faces, they move forward. And they collect captives like sand. They take in everybody and so much. But they're fearless. They mock at kings and rulers and are a laughing matter to them. They're not afraid of anybody. Oh, king, you think you're so big? Well, look at us. Look at all these nations that we now have in our pockets, these that are of the sands. Look at us. And then they laugh at every fortress and they heap up rubble to capture it. You've got a nice little city here made out of stone. Let me think here. How are we going to take this down? We'll siege it. We'll build up around it and you will eventually give us the city. Well, lo and behold, isn't that what they do with Jerusalem? There is no fortress that can keep them. They look at it and they say, taken from Eddie's class this morning, oh man, there's a big wall there, we can't go. They look at that as an opportunity to show how strong and how smart and how ferocious they are. So then, verse 11, they will sweep like the wind and they will pass on. Just like a storm coming through, they are come out of nowhere. Boom, they pass right on through and they are gone, but they will be held guilty. Why? They're not doing it because God asked them to do it. They are doing it out of their own ambition, out of their own authority, as we saw earlier, and they give their praise for all of the things that they collect to their gods. And God says, I will hold them accountable. They will be guilty. Well, Habakkuk hears this. And Habakkuk understands something here. He understands in verse 12, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? Like, God, haven't you like been king from like forever? So, we will not die. You, O Lord, have appointed them to judge. And you, O rock, have established them to correct. Well, what is he saying here? He's saying, you're our God, and you always have been. You're our rock. You're our fortress. You are the one who protects us. But you've raised them up to correct us, to judge us. And he says, I don't get that. I don't understand that. Except for that's what you said you're doing. But I want you to notice what he still has, even in this little bit. He says, we will not die. What was he just told that these people were coming with? They were coming with violence. And what do? They take their captives like the sand. But yet Habakkuk understands, what does God do for his people? God saves his people. So even in the statement of God says, I'm going to judge my people, Habakkuk understands that in that same breath, God will also save his people. That is just the way God works. But yet he's still completely confused. He says, but Lord, your eyes are too pure to approve evil. And you cannot look on wickedness with favor. So why do you look with favor on those who deal treacherously? God, it is against your character to let bad things be looked on in a positive way. So why are you going to let them take us? Why are you using them? And why are you silent when the wicked swallows up those more righteous than they? God, how can you let this be? And it's interesting that he calls them more righteous. Like what was his original cry? The wicked surround the righteous. But yet now, if we were to compare human being versus human being, he's saying, hey, look, we Jews, we're more righteous than those godless Chaldeans. But yet he'd still say, man, these people are so wicked too. So what I think he's saying is, God, how would you allow this people who is not your people to swallow up your people and you never say a word about it? That completely confuses him. He explains that confusion a little more. He says in verse 14, why have you made men like the fish of the sea? Like keeping things without a ruler over them. There's nobody in control. It's just free for all out there. And they're out there fishing for us. We are their prey. And the Chaldeans, they bring all of them up with a hook. They drag them away with their net. And they gather them together in their fishing net. And gather them together in their fishing net. I must have typed that in there like four times. Therefore, it wasn't supposed to be in there for emphasis. It was just me mistaking the typing there. Therefore, they rejoice and are glad. They're out there, they think they're the ones that are in control, they're gathering all these people, and they're just getting more and more, and so they're happy about it. And when they bring them in, what do? 16? They offer a sacrifice to their net, and they burn incense to their fishing net, because through these things, their catch is large, and their food is plentiful. Like, they've got everything to show, we did all of this. Look at that nation. Got it? Look at that nation. Got it? Look at that nation. Got it? And they rightfully are saying, yeah, this is awesome. This is our catch. And Habakkuk says, will they therefore empty their net and continually slay nations without sparing? God, are you going to continue to allow them to do this to nation after nation after nation? and especially after our nation? Habakkuk doesn't get it. Habakkuk is confused. You know why? Because he's human. Because if we had the same thing told to you and me, we would also not believe it. Like, it just doesn't match up with the way we think. That God could use such a wicked person or a wicked nation to do something to teach His people a lesson. But yet, isn't that almost... That's not correct. Almost always is not correct. Isn't that the way God corrects His people a lot of times? Is by people that are actually worse than them. And what does that help indicate? What does that help show? You're not so good. You're not so special. Without me, you are nothing. And without me, these people are nothing. Well, they don't even recognize me. But you need to recognize, without me, you are just another nation. And for some reason, Christians fall right into the trap that the Jewish nation fell into. We think we are so special because X, Y, Z. And so we rely on that and we forget that the reason that we are special is because we are God's chosen people. It is because we are trying to be holy as He is holy. All of that comes right from 1 Peter 1 and 2. But when we stop being holy like He is holy, and we turn into wicked surrounding the righteous, guess what our Holy Father does? He judges. He refines, to use Eddie's term this morning in class. He corrects. He judges. And He's not necessarily going to do that with the fine, upstanding Christians. But He's probably going to do that with brutish, ungodly people or nations. And we might find ourselves in that situation and be like, God, this does not match Your character. How do You look on them favorably and not on us favorably? That is exactly what Habakkuk is asking. He's confused. But yet, notice how the chapter ends. Actually, I guess it begins in chapter 2. Yet I will stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart. And I will keep watch to see what He will speak to me and how I may reply when I am reproved. I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to let You answer back to me. I wonder what He expected to come back. He definitely expects to be corrected, doesn't He? He says, I'm waiting to be reproved. God is going to help me understand what I am. But I'm going to sit and I'm going to wait. Well, the Lord does respond to him. And the Lord responds in verse 2. The Lord answered me and said, record the vision and inscribe it on tablets that the one who reads it may run. When you hear what I am going to do, you better get running. Because it is going to be awful. For the vision, verse 3, is yet appointed for the appointed time. And it hastens toward the goal, and it will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it. For it will certainly come. It will not delay. I'm doing something about it, Habakkuk. It's going to happen. Both things that you asked about are going to happen. The wicked of Judah will be judged, and this wicked nation will be judged. You can rest assured in that. And it's going to happen sooner rather than later. But yet, you better write it down, because everyone needs to hear this and understand, get away. This is awful. I want you to think about it from this standpoint again. When they said, back in chapter 1, they come with violence. They take captives like the sand. It didn't spare people. But we have a very famous phrase that follows this verse right here. We have this, it will not
fail. It will not delay. But, behold, as for the proud one. That may be the Chaldeans. I think that's probably the idea. His soul is not right within him. But, the righteous will live by his faith. That's what is quoted in the New Testament over and over. The righteous shall live by his faith. I think he literally means, if you are going to survive this great violence that is coming from Babylon, you must have faith. If you have faith, you can live through this awful, terrible, fearful, ferocious judge because of this faith. And furthermore, verse 5, talking about the one who is proud, and again, probably the Chaldeans or maybe those of Judah. But furthermore, wine betrays the haughty man so that he does not stay at home. He enlarges his appetite like Sheol, and he's like death, never satisfied. And he also gathers to himself all nations and collects to himself all people. What we're talking about here is someone who is doing something for themselves and they are never satisfied with it. Isn't that a picture? Like death, never satisfied. See, wouldn't you think, if death could be personified, right? And we do that, don't we? We have the Grim Reaper. And the Grim Reaper shows up, guess what? Grim Reaper's not being like, oh, you know what, I've killed enough people in my day. I've been from everlasting to everlasting. You know what, I've killed 15 quadrillion people. So you know what, that's all I need. That's all I need. No, you're there. Oh, let me put my little staff on you and you're dead. There, right? Well, that's the way these people are. They never have enough. Take one nation, guess what? We're going for the next nation. And I want you to think, is that really any different with any other sin? Once you get some of it, don't we want more of it? And it might be the same sin that we continually do over and over and over again because we actually take pleasure and joy in that sin. Well, guess what? In that case, we'd be like Chaldeans. We're not going to be left unguilty in that because we continually to give in this, but the righteous one. Remember what he said? How is it that these people would be able to swallow up people more righteous than they are? Well, those with the faith would not be swallowed up. They would go. And so chapter 2 makes a little transition here. It makes a transition to a little taunt, a little song of woes that will come upon this nation, upon this king. And so you'll notice in verse 6, would not all these take up a taunt song against him? Even mockery and insinuations against him? Do you remember what they did in chapter 1? They mocked the other kings. They laughed at the fortresses. Guess what? Tables are now turning on this nation. So woe to him who increases what is not his. Now, I pictured pirates in this, right? Pirates, they go in. Back in the day, they would take over a ship. And they would loot other pirates on top of it, right? So one pirate would be taking from somebody else. And then they get on the deck and they go, ha ha, Captain, hire, Captain. And they take them over, right? I've always wanted to work in a pirate somehow into a sermon. And so there I did, right? You know, I got it. Well, guess what's going to happen in like 2 days? Another set of pirates is going to come after these pirates. And guess what? They're going to be like, arr, I got you, right? And it's just constantly upheaval. It's like the sea. Its waves are going up, down, up, down. But this nation has been going on for a while. But their other nations will take up the taunt. And they'll say, how long? And makes himself rich with loans. Will not your creditors, God says, rise up suddenly? And those who are collect from you awaken? You've been taken. Will they not finally get you? Yes. Because, verse 8, you have looted many nations. And all the remainder of the people will loot you because of human bloodshed and violence done to the land, to the town, and all its inhabitants. They weren't getting away with this. We will see so often how much it talks about their violence. God says, doesn't it make sense that they would rise up, they would ask for it? It does. Notice the next woe. There's another group of woes. Verse 9, woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to put his nest on high, to be delivered from the hand of calamity. What I think the picture is here is you're gathering all of this money and all of this wealth so that you can protect yourself. And you're putting it up high. We call it a nest egg, don't we? Where this will get me if I've got troubles, there's my nest egg, and I'll be able to get out of anything that comes my way. So you build this, and you got this thing prepared. And so they would. So verse 10. You devise the shameful thing for your house by cutting off many peoples, so you are sinning against yourself. What do you mean you're sinning against yourself? Notice verse 11. Surely the stone will cry out from the wall of the building, and the rafter will answer it from the framework. Well, what? You know who they're hurting? Their own people. Whether it be their own family or whether it be their own nation, because of the way in which they have acted, the way in which they are trying to set themselves up high and protect themselves, what they are actually doing is destroying themselves. And so they say to one another, what are you doing? The rafter cries out, and the stone cries out, all that is a part of it. Not a good thing. Or another woe in verse 12. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and founds a town with violence. You think it's a good thing to just go in and start a city by killing the people that were there previously and taking that one, right? Not ideal. It did happen in one sense, didn't it? When God was bringing judgment on who? The Canaanites. Took it. Israel given that land. But you'll notice, that's not what was always the case with the Babylonians, the Chaldeans. He says, is it not, verse 13, indeed, from the Lord of hosts, that peoples toil for fire, and nations grow weary for nothing? That's like the idea of vanity, where everything that they are in pursuit of, everything that they are doing, because it is not founded on God, and its foundation is not in God, but is in this human bloodshed, is in this human greed, is in all these various things, it will not stand. It cannot. So it is like trying to grab fire. You ever tried to grab fire? Not going to grab it, right? Just isn't happening. Or you're trying to grab the air. You're not able to collect it. And that is what they're doing. Everything that they build, as magnificent as it is, and everything that they gather, and all nations that now have come up to them, as magnificent as it is. And do you remember how Nebuchadnezzar, the king, the great king of Chaldeans, said, look what I have done with my own hands. Just like that, he was made to go around like an animal. That's who we're talking about, literally. God is saying, And so notice verse 14. Babylon thought about their glory and their greatness. And Nebuchadnezzar thought about his glory and his greatness going throughout all the earth because of his world power. But notice verse 14. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. You know, it's interesting, right? Nebuchadnezzar had one of those seven ancient wonders of the world, right? The hanging Gardens of Babylon. Are the Hanging Gardens of Babylon still there? They're not. They're gone. And yet we still talk about it. Right? That's pretty glorious. But this, God says, people will know me all over the world as water covers the sea. And the final woe is, woe to you who make your neighbors drink, who mix in your venom, even to make them drunk so as to look on their nakedness. You will be filled with disgrace rather than honor. I want you to think about what they're doing. It's people that you're sharing with. It's like you're luring them in by your drink. You're showing them, hey, we're cool with one another. or you are actually getting them drunk and then taking advantage of them or whatever the case may be. I'm not exactly sure. Or maybe you're getting them drunk, intoxicated off of all of the riches and all of the land and all the things that you can say, hey, this is what you'll get. But we talk about that, right? Someone doesn't have to be drunk just on alcohol. They can be drunk on a feeling and all these various things. And so maybe that's the idea. But the point is, you're sharing together with one of these together. And you did that so that you could take advantage of them. Well, now, middle of verse 16. Now you yourself drink and expose your own nakedness. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter disgrace will come upon your glory. I love that way that it says it. The cup of the Lord will come around to you. It's like you're just one of the other nations sitting at the round table. And now what are you getting? The cup of the Lord's wrath. It's going to come. It is there for you. Why? For the violence done to Lebanon will overwhelm you. And the devastation of its beasts by which you terrify them because of human bloodshed and violence done to the land, to the town, and all its inhabitants. Are we tired of hearing about how violent they are? But yet God keeps bringing it up over and over to Habakkuk. And so, as I said, mistakenly, this is the final woe. What profit is in the idol when its maker has carved it? Or an image, a teacher of falsehood? There is none. For its maker trusts in his own handiwork when he fashions speechless idols. Woe to him who says to a piece of wood, awake, to a mute stone, arise, and that is your teacher. Behold, it's overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath or at all inside of it. Idolatry is pretty ridiculous, right? Like when you just boil it down, it's ridiculous, right? But yet, the whole earth was into that. As opposed to the contrast, as he drops the mic at the end of chapter 2, but the Lord is in His holy temple, not Jerusalem. He was leaving that temple. The Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silent before Him. What do you think He was talking about? The Lord sees, and the Lord is in His dwelling place in heaven. He sees what is happening over all of the earth. His glory and knowledge of Him is throughout all the earth. And all the earth should realize they need to be the ones who are mute and no breath in them at all. In other words, don't talk back to me. Respect me. Know that I see this. Know that I have this under control. Habakkuk doesn't seem to answer right away. It almost seems as though Habakkuk does become silent. Because you will notice that in chapter 3, you have a statement, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet according to Shigionoth. I have no idea who Shigionoth is. But you'll notice that it is made sure that we know that this was not written down by Habakkuk. But it was something that someone wrote down what Habakkuk said and what Habakkuk prayed. And here's his prayer. We're going to go through it super briefly. Because this is his reaction to everything that the Lord has just told him. He says, verse 2, Lord, I've heard the report about you, and I fear. Oh, Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known in wrath. Remember mercy. There was nothing encouraging said to him that was coming in the near future. But yet when he thinks back to it, he's always seen God's mercy, even in this judgment. He says, Lord, in wrath, And does the Lord have a right to be angry at His people that are surrounding the righteous? Yes, He does. But does He also have people in there, the remnant, who have been faithful to Him? Yes. Remember mercy. Well, how does He remember all this? How does He come to the conclusion of, yet I will exalt in the Lord, I will rejoice in the God of my salvation? He recalls and He thinks about the Lord's works. It says God, verse 3, comes from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. His splendor covers the heavens, and the earth is full of His praise. His radiance is like the sunlight, His rays from His flashing hand, and there is the hiding of His power. Before Him goes pestilence, and plagues come after Him. He stood and surveyed the earth. He looked and startled the nations. Yes, the perpetual mountains were shattered. The ancient hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan under distress. The tent of the curtains of the land of Midian were trembling. What is He saying? You look back at all the times of how the Lord has dealt with all the nations. They tremble and they fail. But guess what? The Lord is from everlasting. His praise is through all the earth. So notice verse 8. So did Jehovah rage against the waters? Or was your anger against the rivers? Or was your wrath against the sea? That, notice this contrast. You rode on your horses, on your chariots of salvation. You remember how we talked about the horses of the Chaldeans? They were leopards. They were wolves. They were eagles. That's not why God went out on His horses. God went out on His horses to save. And your bow was made bare. The rods of chastisement were sworn. You cleaved the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you. They quaked. The downpours of water swept by. The deep uttered forth its voice. It lifted high its hands. Sun and moon stood in their places. They went away of the light of your arrows, at the radiance of your gleaming spear. In indignation, you marched through the earth. In anger, you trampled the nations. He's seen it all before. And those nations feared before Him. And so, you went forth. Why? For the salvation of your people. For the salvation of your anointed, you struck the head of the house of the evil to lay him open from thy thigh to the neck. You pierced with his own spears the head of his throngs. They stormed into scatters. Their exultation, their glory was like those who devour the oppressed in secret. And you trampled on the sea with your horses, on the surge of many waters. What was his response as he thought about what God had done? I heard, and my inward parts trembled. At the sound, my lips quivered. Decay enters my bones, and in my place I tremble. Because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. His answer from God is, I'm doing something about it, but it is awful what is going to happen. And when he thinks about that, he is very much afraid. But, as our text says, though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, everything is done. Yet I will exalt in the Lord, in the God of my salvation I will rejoice. The Lord God is my strength, and He has made my feet like hinds' feet, and He makes me walk on my high places. So sing the song. That's what he said. That's quite a journey for Habakkuk, isn't it? He ends knowing that he's going to have joy and salvation in the Lord, but yet he has not experienced that. He started with a cry of great distress. Why haven't you done this? But he had some faith when he heard the answer. But he still didn't understand. He was confused. And don't we fall into that sometimes? We believe this, but yet we still don't understand this. We're confused by it. So what did he decide to do? He would wait for the Lord to answer and correct him. Pretty good action, right? And when the Lord answered him, what was he willing to do? He listened to that answer. Scary as it was, and as difficult as it was, he took that in. And he thought about it. He thought about how God had delivered his people over and over and over again, and how the nations, as strong and as mighty as they were, and as powerful as they were, they did not stand a chance. That if he was his rock, he would be saved. But yet, that was his trust, that was his faith. But the reality was, the people that are coming are ferocious people. And there was no getting out of that. But yet, the righteous will live by his faith. He could rejoice that he was not losing faith in the God of his salvation, and all would be okay. And the lesson for you and I is, no matter how terrifying it is, what is coming at us, rejoice in the God of our salvation. Trust in the Lord. Have faith in him. And you will live. That is ultimately what Jesus is. I think we can relate a little bit to Habakkuk on just a few levels. Maybe this night you're ready to be baptized into Jesus. You're ready to have your sins washed away. Or you need the prayers of the church here. Why don't you come now as we stand and as we sing.